Okay, and I think we're back. Hour number three. This is our ghost story hour. And how many total entries were there, Brad? I didn't count them all.
Oh, gee. I didn't either.
There were a lot.
There were a lot. And we read them and read them. I so appreciated Sherry's help as well as you guys. We went over and over, and when did I finally send them to you? Like at 6 this morning?
It was very early in the morning.
Okay, we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 12 stories, all good, all with a unique flavor. It was really difficult. We read over and over and finally arrived at, as you said, with the art, Jeff. So many of them could have been first, could have been second, but when you have a contest, you have to come to that decision.
The night of the long knives.
That, indeed, it was the long night.
And just
so
remember,
we came up with second, and third.
Here's a little drum roll for you. Got to use this music here.
Okay. That's a drum roll.
Well, it's a clock roll.
Clock roll. Well, that fits staying up for the better part of two nights reading, that's for sure.
Listen to that.
Okay. That's a clock roll.
All right, clock roll. Okay. Here we go. We're going to go through the break at the bottom, Brad, so we can be sure to read all these. Our three winners and Lord Bradley, the winner. You want to go 3-2-1 or 1-2-3?
Well, let's do 1-2-3. I don't care. Do you want to do 3-2-1?
There's more drama that way.
Okay. Third prize, then. Those Old Haunted Homes and Cemetery by Don Avery.
We'll
second
overlook
prize.
The fact that cemetery is misspelled here. It wasn't Don's fault.
No. Second prize, The Last Goodbye.
Now, that's a Raymond Chandler title, if there ever was one. In fact, there was one.
N. Abelly, or Abel.
Enable.
Yeah, Enable, yes.
I don't know. All right.
And the first prize, a very unique story on many levels, a family ghost story by Jerry Bridges.
Well, there you go. Three good ones.
They are good ones.
Congratulations to you folks. Now, again, the criteria for any of you listening in for the first time, these had to be first or second hand.
Right.
And they had to be real. And we're not looking for fiction here.
No. It's very difficult, and to determine always, of course. And we can't say. We didn't give everyone a lie detector test. So we have to take everyone's word that
honor system.
Yeah. There's no other way. No, I remember my first book of ghost stories. the reviewer praised it because I did not just recount, but I dramatized the story.
Really?
And they said Steiger has blended the two genres and has given the ghost story rebirth. Well, that was very nice, and I was kind of full of myself. Until then another reviewer said, well, you know, maybe he does it a little too much, and we don't know if he made it up or if it's really true. So that's always a problem when you're writing. You want to give it life. You want to give it power. You want to give it energy.
So easy to change just a couple of words.
Yeah, and so that's I've really tasked myself from then on when I was that bright-eyed 29-year-old, the first book, to do a line, make it exciting, make it thrilling, but be sure, because I'm saying, you know, my book, well, I've written three novels, but I'm saying, you know, the other 180 of the books are nonfiction, so they have to be nonfiction. But you do want to make them. So here again, we're looking at these. These are well-written. These are exciting. And they're spooky. So it has all those elements, and we have to take the author's word that this is true.
Right. Right. Okay. Well, shall we start reading?
I guess.
You read, I'll read, then you read.
Okay. I'll start with the prize winner, okay?
A family...
The first prize?
A family ghost,
ghost story. Okay, so...
By Jerry Bridges.
So I'm reading as if I were Jerry now, telling this. Sitting around and Jerry is telling us this story.
Okay.
I was 17 and a young soldier in 1965 on reassignment orders to a U.S. Army overseas facility at Kaiserslautern, Germany. I reported for duty only to find that the unit was deactivating. Then it was in the process of moving all the soldiers to new locations. The sergeant told me to go find myself a cot in one of the vacant rooms that I could have my pick as to which, and I'd be notified in a few days as to my new orders. It was on day two that I met two other soldiers in the same boat. However, unlike me, they'd taken up temporary residence on another floor. We became friends, mainly taking our meals together, avoiding all authority while waiting for our new assignments. The room I selected was on the second floor of the drafty old stone structure that I reasoned had in the past housed many German soldiers. But now all was quiet. And as I learned, the vacant billet was an understatement, regardless of who used to call it home. It was like a ghost town. My room was empty of all furnishings except for two other cots. No one was claiming either, and I enjoyed the privacy, knowing it would be short-lived once my orders came. On day three, after a good night's rest, I woke to the door opening. In stepped a young soldier about my age, wearing a dress green uniform and sporting a green beret. He stopped at the doorway and asked if he might join me in the room. I welcomed him to come in, so much for privacy, and quickly pointed out that I recognized him as a Special Forces soldier. The green beret he wore cocked in his head being a dead giveaway. He smiled. Closing the door, he sat next to my cot where we engaged in further conversation. I could see by the black plastic name tag he wore that his last name was similar to mine. His name was Bridger, mine was Bridges. I pointed out this fact, excited as I had not encountered another soldier with a similar name. He told me he and his family were firmly rooted in North Carolina. I told him mine was from Kentucky. We exchanged further small talk, at which time I again brought up his green beret. That's when he explained he really wasn't Special Forces, that he really wasn't even old enough to be in the Army. That by some trickery, he had managed to join with a group of real special forces soldiers that had deployed to a place far from his home, a place called Vietnam. I had not heard of Vietnam and told him so, to which he explained to my amazement that he'd been caught by surprise almost immediately upon arrival in the jungle and shot and killed. What? I'll admit I was surprised by what he's saying, but at the same time, found his manner, in an oddly and curious way, quite believable. He explained further that as he lay on the ground dying, he had wished he had not tricked anyone, that he'd stayed with family and friends back in North Carolina and not gone to Vietnam, and how he had wished, with all his might, to be able to visit with another soldier, a relative, and that was me. The names were different, but he claimed we were related, and that's why he was there in my room. His wish had been granted, if only in part, saying beyond that he had little understanding as to why he was there in my room, and became visually surprised that he was in Germany. After a few minutes, he moved to one of the vacant cots and lay down. I dressed in my fatigues, was lacing my boots when my two buddies came crashing in with the purpose of getting me to go to the mess hall for lunch. One of the two of the sat on the edge where Bridger lay quietly looking over at me, listening to the general festive conversation, but not participating. I thought this rude that no one had acknowledged his presence, so I asked myself if it'd be okay if Bridger joined us. They looked at each other and at me, seemingly lost as to what I was asking. Bridger said they couldn't see him, that no one else could see him. He said he would stay until we left and then he'd continue on with his journey. That sounded strange, but so had everyone else up to that point. Caught up in my two friends' insistence, we left the room with Bridger looking over and waving goodbye as the door closed behind us. Thinking this had been an elaborate ruse at my expense, I laughed and said so, bringing up the matter as we continued down the stairs. But again, through vacant stares and comments, they had no idea what I was talking about. I tried relaying Bridger's stories as we went, but they wouldn't listen. Seated in the dining facility, they insisted that no one was in my room and asked that I drop this idiotic conversation. I was beginning to believe they actually hadn't seen Bridger, and perhaps I might be losing my mind. Upon returning to my room, Bridger was gone, never to be seen by me again. My new orders came that day, and that was the last I saw of my two lunch buddies, for which I was thankful, for I was sure they thought me completely nuts. Nearly 10 years later, I learned our family name of Bridges had in fact long ago been Bridger. My ancestors had migrated from North Carolina and taken up residence in Kentucky. Submitted by Jerry Bridges. Now, this ghost story is unique in many ways because it deals with the aspect of time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's mm-hmm. what we found so fascinating. It just had that extra touch. And if you put yourself in the position of being in 1965 and someone comes from the future to say he's been granted the wish, even though he got in this terrible and was shot almost immediately on arriving in Vietnam, he was given the wish of seeing someone his age. I mean, it has so many elements in it that the more you think about it, the more intrigued, and the more you get that little shiver up the back.
Very interesting story. Very interesting. Sounds wonderful.
Now, the closing comments, of course, were mine. I should have indicated that. I'm sorry.
Don't let it happen again.
I promise.
Very appropriate, and it's a very interesting story. I just wonder how many there are out there that we can't even imagine. The world is stranger than we can imagine.
much stranger.
And much more wondrous, too.
Indeed.
It's whatever is at the helm that messes it up. Very nice. Very nice story, Jerry. Thank you for that. Jerry Bridges. Or Jerry Bridger.
That's right. That's right.
The last goodbye. If anybody wants to experience Los Angeles when it was still a really neat place, read Philip Marlowe. Did you ever like Philip Marlowe?
Yes, indeed. Couldn't be someone aspiring to be a young writer without, you know.
No, he was...
Without getting into Philip Marlowe and going through there. And you had at the same time the reinforcement of the Bogart films, you know, accompanying it.
Didn't hurt.
Didn't hurt at all.
Yeah. I remember reading the first one, and I was transported. L.A. was a pretty neat place in the 30s and 40s.
Yeah.
Gone now. Gone now. Gone when the red cars were destroyed. Did you ever ride the red cars, Brad?
No.
Greatest mass transit system for a size served in the world. Those big red cars, electric, pollution-free, would carry up to 70 people, I think, something like that, the bigger ones. They could do 65 miles an hour, and they went all over the Los Angeles area, all over, from San Fernando to Long Beach to downtown to San Bernardino to Redlands, all the way down to Newport Beach. They went everywhere. You could ride for it. I was told you could ride for a nickel all day on any of them.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Golden years.
Well, and where did they go? What happened? If they were around today, they would still be just as popular, and they'd look a little different, no doubt, but the rights of way are still there. That's why some of the boulevards in the valley especially are so wide. They have these enormous plant mediums in the center, and that's where the red car line would run. They'd have 2-3 sets of tracks. You can look it up. I've got some pieces on that at the site. Wonderful things. Okay, the second story, our second place winner this year, is called The Last Goodbye. And let me make sure the author again is N.Abele.
Right.
N.Abele, I would say.
Yeah, I think you probably have it there.
At any rate. Okay, this is a goodbye story. On April 8th, 1990, at 8:30 p.m., I received a phone call from my brother. We were 3 time zones apart. He informed me that tonight was the night. I knew what that meant. It was only a week earlier that originally scheduled, and I was counting the days. I had depended on having at least 7 more days of sharing with him what time he had left. Since my last visit with him, I spoke to him daily by telephone, generally once in the morning and again during the early evening hours. I had spent a week with him just 6 weeks earlier, knowing it would be our last visit. He forbade tears in his presence. He was in good spirits and not morose about his impending death at all. During that particular visit, we spoke of death and pondered the afterlife and what it may or may not be. We both believe that we are energy life forms, and therefore the energy must go somewhere. When we parted from that visit, I hugged goodbye an almost skeleton. He was quickly wasting away. This particular April evening would be the last time we would speak. Our conversation lasted only 30 minutes. All arrangements were in place. I knew he was in good hands. I wished him peace and a smooth way. I hung up the phone and I went out on the back porch. There was a full moon. I cried long and hard, knowing I was about to lose one of my life's best friends. I went to bed at 10:30 that evening. My mind was recalling past events that involved my brother and me. Memories. Lots of memories. Fun ones, happy ones. I saw him on his first bicycle, riding off to school. He rode his bike alongside me as I walked, and he made me crazy eights and circles, and we chatted away until we had to part ways. I walked on to my high school, and he rode off to grade school. I watched him pedal up the tree-lined street on an early spring morning. I was so happy for him that he finally had his long-awaited bicycle. I cried off and on and couldn't sleep. I dreaded the expected phone call that would advise me all was finished. But at the same time, I would welcome it. My brother's suffering would be over. I kept glancing at the digital clock on my nightstand. The numbers glowed a sky blue and cast a soft light in the darkness of the room. Each time I would calculate the time where my brother was. My last glance at the clock before I mercifully dozed off read a few minutes before 2 a.m. I was awakened by a light tickling right between my eyes. I surmised it was a cat's whiskers, and I opened my eyes expecting to see my cat in my face. But there was nothing there. I closed my eyes and drifted back to sleep for only a few seconds and felt the tickle again in the very same spot. This time, I smoothed the blanket down and looked for the cat. But from the corner of my eye, off to my right side, I caught a tiny dot of light hovering about 8 inches from my head. A tiny dot of bright white light in the semi-darkness that did not belong there. I turned my head and focused on the light, and once I did this, the light began to expand, and it drifted away from me. The light had my full attention, and I was trying to discern what I was seeing, although I could not recall ever seeing anything of its kind before. I became aware of a steady, even hum. Yet I was unable to discern if I was actually hearing this hum or feeling the vibration of sound. It was similar to the experience of holding a tuning fork and striking it. The steadiness and the evenness of the sound vibration was incredible. The light had grown now and now filled the entire corner of the room. It was a soft light now, and it had depth and dimension to it, but I could see my bedroom furniture through it, and the light now had rainbow colors within it. It had grown from a bright dot of light to something more defined with color and depth, but less bright. All this occurred in the space of about 45 seconds. I then remembered the plight of my brother, and the light quickly faded away. I turned and looked at the clock. It was 3:12 a.m. I awoke just before 7 a.m. I received the awaited phone call at 9:50 a.m. my time. My brother's suffering was over, as I expected. The remainder of the day seemed like a fog to me. There was the realization and finality, the memories, the loss, the pain. Already I missed my brother and still do. As the day turned to evening, I suddenly recalled the light and the hum that had awakened me in the early morning hours. I remembered it was 3:12 a.m. when I last saw it. I raced to the telephone and called the person who would know the answer to my question. What time did my brother die? I was told between 6 and 6:30 a.m. In my time zone, that would be between 3 and 3:30 a.m. I began laughing and crying at the same time. That light, that hum, was that my brother's energy force communicating to me? The deliberate yet soft tickle between the eyes, the waiting for my full attention and focus just to show me that, yes, the energy does go somewhere, and it is conscious and aware and has purpose. I could almost hear my brother laughing as I began connecting the dots, and I knew that he knew that this demonstration would comfort me at this time, and I would hold it in my memory forever. A treasured last goodbye. And that was submitted by N. Abel, we'll call it. Very nice story of a transition and energy involved. And this has been, of course, the subject of much of Brad and Sherry's work over the years, that we are energetic beings and we don't die. And my goodness, how many books on NDEs have we talked about on this program over the years?
So many, so many.
Yeah.
And we felt, and I knew that you guys would agree that, I'll just say it bluntly, that we get so many letters like this.
I'll bet.
And we thought there were so many people would identify with this story.
Mm-hmm.
And that little example, that little bit of, here is proof for you. We receive so many that say, essentially, this is my proof of survival. This is my proof. This is what happened to me with my father, my grandfather, my aunt, my mother, my sister. And that's why we thought a lot of people, and it's written, as you say, Sherry and I read it over and over and got a little misty-eyed reading it because it you identify with it, too. It's well done.
It is. And the way the light grew, softer
right.
yet larger, and
the hum.
Colors in it, and the hum, the sensation. It's just beautifully stated, and I'm sure that there are those of you listening out there right now who may have had experiences not terribly dissimilar to that at the time when someone that you really love and care about passes on. And remember, they go ahead just to make a place for you.
Well said. Well said.
Okay. Number three, those old haunted homes and cemetery. Those old haunted homes and cemetery by Don Avery.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Brad, go ahead.
He says, begins by saying that this is his family's experience in the state's oldest community. We moved to a small eastern community in 1989 where I took a job with the city. One of my responsibilities was the overall management of the cemetery. It dated back to 1854 and had roughly 6,300 burials, which is a lot for a small town. Early in 1990, I hired a sexton to make an effort to correlate all of the cemetery records through an on-site review, and then we would compare the records at City Hall to see where it would come out. During the preceding years, I and the office staff had data based on all of the cemetery record. By the spring of 1993, I had a very strong knowledge of the cemetery and its various sections. At the time, we were living a few blocks away in one of the community's older homes. My wife and children professed a great deal of anxiety and fear over what they perceived as an incessant amount of strange occurrences in this house, none of which they were able to explain. I frankly was very skeptical, although we had lived in homes before that had a lot of paranormal activity. I decided to check this one out. A number of the city staff had lived in their town all of their lives. Upon inquiry to one of my clerks, I was informed that at one time there had been a third floor on this house that had burned during the war. There had been a fatality. Consensus seemed to indicate that the casualty was a young man. This entity was said to be very mischievous. Apparently, he enjoyed turning on water faucets, opening washing machine doors, turning on or off lights, slamming doors. I was skeptical of these claims. But one Saturday night, I got to visit the bathroom. The only light that was on in the house was in the hallway. When I exited the bathroom, I was quite surprised to see that the only lights that were not on were in the bedrooms, the front room, dining, kitchen, laundry room. All the lights were turned on. I decided the family was right. We needed to move. The very next morning, I was on a walk through the cemetery when I noticed a young woman in a faded dress standing in front of a headstone in one of the older parts of the cemetery. The dress looked like an early 20th century wedding dress. I turned and walked over to where she was standing. She appeared to be in her 20s. She was slim, long brown hair, medium height. She was looking down at the headstone with a very sad look on her face. I quickly surveyed the cemetery. There were no vehicles or other people in the cemetery. From where I stood, I could see all of the grounds. She vanished as I approached. I noticed a man's name on the headstone. I wondered what could be happening since she probably wasn't buried there. The name on front was that of a man, Slocum. But since the stone was four-sided, I decided to check the back of it. It was the only Jewish headstone in the cemetery. It was unique in shape, and I have remembered it from previous trips to the seminary. The name Emma Moore was on the rear of the stone. She had died at age 26 in the early part of that century. A daughter, maybe. A check of the city's burial records confirmed that they were both buried in this grave. We soon found a house and moved ASAP. The children were becoming paranoid, and my wife was unhappy with the current arrangements. Peace at last, I thought. Wrong. It wasn't long before the children began complaining about noises in the basement, footfalls on the stairs coming up from the basement. One afternoon, several months later, I was home preparing lunch when I heard footfalls coming up the stairs. They were located directly behind the kitchen, and these footfalls were quite loud. I sprang to my feet and ran to the door. This will end right now, I thought. As I opened the door, a wispy figure of a middle-aged woman scooted by me and into the kitchen, where she soon vanished. That afternoon, I checked with the long-time residents again about the prior occupants of that house. The building inspector informed me that a woman fitting the description had lived there about 20 years earlier. She died in a plane crash a few miles west of town. The call went out again. We're moving. We subsequently found a fairly new home that had no comp. Location. I then received a phone call from the local car mechanic that had moved into our prior residence. He stated that he had heard about our experiences in this house and that he and his family had recently moved in and was having some strange experiences. What kind? I asked. He stated that he'd placed their three-month-old child in a playpen in a side bedroom. When he entered the room some 20 minutes later to check on the baby, he found it crawling around on the floor outside of the pen. How could that happen? What should I do? He asked. Move, I said. Now. Now, this story is a little more in the traditional haunted house and cemetery, where we see images of entities and the house. And we thought it gave a nice balance to the three winners, because we had an interesting one where time and space are really, really interestingly distorted, or maybe, you know, that's what time is. Who do we know? How do we know? We haven't identified what time really is. And then we had one that...
just know it's going too fast.
We know it's going too fast.
I mean, it's so really going fast now.
Yeah, okay. But those are our prize winners, and we think they cover the gamut of the paranormal.
Yeah, yeah, and maybe the paranormal is not para at all. It's just
not
quite normal. We just don't, we're not taught that. That's denied to us, which is wrong. Okay, we will be right back. Congratulations to our winners, and we really appreciate your contribution. Hang on. Okay, and we are back. There's just one segment left here. Let's see what we've got here. Get all this music. Ah, that doesn't make the grade. Let's see what this one does.
I'm just on the front page now, seeing how wonderfully captivating.
Oh, it looks great, doesn't it?
Oh, it looks great. But again, it'd be a perfect card. Can't you imagine inside?
We've had enough cards for a major Halloween card section in a store over
Indeed.
The years.
Absolutely.
And I only wish there was a way that we could have made them all, you know, succeed in that realm. Because they're good. Just excellent. Frankly, when you look at the card displays, the racks, they're junk, a lot of them. Just junk. And you say, well, how in the heck did that card ever get made and distributed?
Right, right.
I don't understand. Don't get it. Oh, it is windy out there.
Oh, it is. I think we have another storm coming. It is really blowing out there. Hans and I went out to check things out during a break, and it is really howling.
Hans took you for a walk?
Appropriately for Halloween, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Did it sound anything like that?
Just about.
Now, do you still, you don't hang lights on the castle? Or do you?
No.
You don't need to.
We used to.
Yeah.
But,
they have people that do that now.
Yeah, people stopped coming around. You know, the kids didn't come around because I guess we put too much of our energy into it. And
well, now, with the castle itself, all you have to do is put lights on the windows up high, and that's enough to spook anybody out.
Yeah, right. We had some windows with flashing lights and made, you know, werewolf appearing, one monster and another, a ghost and another, and so forth. And the kids didn't come back after that, next Halloween, so we...
That did it.
You hear Sherry laughing in the back. It really wasn't funny. But
that ended the tour buses.
It did.
Here's
we were just having fun, you know.
That's what's supposed to be.
That's what we thought.
Yeah. All right. Here's a flash from the past. This is a good one. See if you recognize this voice. One of the most distinctive voices in Hollywood history. Whoops. The wind is still blowing. I'll turn the wind off. There we go. Who says weather control isn't real? All right, now we have... Here we go.
Every fantastic story told of him by the people of Frankenstein, I now believe to be absolutely true. I, as a man, should destroy him. As a scientist, I should do everything in my power to bring him back to conscious life so that the world can study his abnormal functions. That would vindicate my father, and his name would be enshrined among the immortals. Benson, turn on the generator.
No messing around this time.
No way. It stopped?
No, they're not lifting him up. This is the son of Frankenstein.
Right.
He stays in the lab on the table. They got the Van de Graaff generators all over the place. Oh, smoke is coming out of his neck.
Now, that's still Boris. Let's see. Glenn Strange. Well, no.
No, it's...
Dracula himself played the monster. But that's still Boris.
No, this is Karloff as the monster.
The second one.
And Bela is playing the servant.
Right.
The hunchback servant.
Igor.
Right. Well, that was a little clip. All right.
But it was nice that Sherlock Holmes was able to be there to narrate.
I was a big and remain a big Basil Rathbone fan. Now here's
he was fabulous.
Here's a Universal Pictures real trailer. That was just a clip. Here's the actual what people would see in the theaters.
The man might have destroyed him. But as a scientist, I should do everything in my power to bring him back to conscious life. Benson, turn on the generator. Produced on a vast scale, Son Frankenstein presents the most fearsome cast in the history of the screen. In his heart, warm human emotions. In his mind, the monster mania. Karloff, rising from the past to spread new terror. Golse, sinister, mysterious, evil, Lionel Atwill, grim hatred in his blood.
By heaven, I think you're a worse fiend than your father.
Where is this monster? Where is he? I'll stay by your side until you confess. And if you don't, I'll feed you to the villagers.
New terror loosed upon a startled world. Rathbone, Karloff, Lugosi, Atwill. Son of Frankenstein. A great film, folks.
They knew how to pitch him in those
Was
days.
It the greatest cast in the history of cinema? Wasn't that what the guy said or something?
Well, and the most frightening film in history of cinema.
That's right. That too. Yeah, it was a good one. All right, now it's time for our friendly warning to all of our friends out there, which is the best kind of warning to give to friends who have children and you're going to go out tomorrow night. Many don't go out anymore, and that's understandable. You have a get-together, you have a party, neighborhoods will get together and decorate a house, which is kind of fun for kids. But you know, when you really look at Halloween for what it is now, all the terribly toxic candy, it's handed out. I would urge you, take the candy, let the kids have one piece, and give it away. Just get rid of it. It's just not healthy. It's not good. Other than that, I guess it used to be when you were a kid, people would make things and popcorn balls and candied apples and I don't know what. But you could trust people to make things that would be healthy and wholesome and nice. Not anymore.
No, we always had I never went trick-or-treating when I was a child. I went trick-or-treating with our children. But that just wasn't a part of it. We gathered at a home, and we had truly bobbing for apples, and like you said, popcorn balls, and the whole thing, and had a very, very nice, safe, sane.
Were you, was this a big party?
Another warning. We should give another warning. Ouija came out.
Oh, God.
Swept Well, I don't think the critics swept them, but in terms of box office, it just swept all the other films that came out.
Wait a minute. What film? I don't know this.
Ouija.
The name of the film was Ouija?
Yes.
No.
And it made...
This is recent?
Yeah, it's just out. Just out. Came out last weekend.
It was a Halloween film.
And it... Yes. And it just
Oh, my God.
Swept.
And it...
It swept
well,
the, all the other films. The new Brad Pitt movie, all of them bowed to Ouija. And
you know what that means, obviously, all of you listening. Brad knows, I know. Do not buy a Ouija board. Do not allow your children to mess with these things.
And it's not a Halloween board game. It is not a board game like Monopoly or... Sugarland or any other thing the kids play. So don't let them talk to you in because it's neat now. It's in a big buster movie.
Mm-hmm. Number one.
Number one. Swept everything aside.
Unbelievable. Was the Brad Pitt movie any good?
I guess the reviews are pretty decent on that. It's a World War II film.
Yeah, veterans say it's very accurate to what it was.
And that's, of course, WW2 we have to emphasize.
Yeah. Indeed. Well, I think, where are we here?
About time for our good night song.
I think it is. All I have to do is cue it up. You know, my clock is somehow wrong. It's not right. I don't know what's wrong with it. When it's not right, it's wrong.
That's
and
right.
Thank you.
But twice a day, it's right.
It's actually... Hold the music, Brad. Todd. Thank you. I got to do this. This is... forgive me for being slightly... I had the wrong cable. Say something for a minute.
Okay. Happy Halloween from Sherry and myself and Hans. And we have been privileged to see wonderful artwork and story.
I'll see
there it
you
is.
In my dreams. Hold you in my dreams. Someone took you out of my arms. Still I feel the thrill of your charms. Lips that once were mine, tender eyes that shine, they will light my way tonight. I'll see you. That once was